I'm Bill Zortman, and welcome to our It's Your Agribusiness Show. Joining us in studio today, South Dakota Farmers Union, Wayne Soren, Vice President. Are you here?
I'm here. Been wild, Bill.
How long's it been since you've been in the studio?
Boy, I'm guessing a year.
You know, your mask is a little older than that. But
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but it matches my shirt.
And then you got this man in motion guy. You know, they've got him traveling with this safety trailer. Is he safe when he drives that sucker?
He's supposed to be. Nobody's really ever seen.
Rocky, good morning to you.
Good morning, Bill. It's good to be back again.
You know, I had a chance to talk to three of the guests earlier. As you look at the guests that are in the show, which ones, just pick one each that you think that you really want to hear.
Probably the assumptions is a pretty interesting one.
Yeah, that's always good. From you, Man in Motion?
Kim Maslin, I think that's going to be interesting.
Well, let's don't wait. Let's get right to it.
Secretary Kim Malzum-Risden, the State Health Department of South Dakota. Who thought a COVID-19 pandemic would last this long?
Well, I know it seems like 2019 is pretty far in the past, and unfortunately, we're still dealing with COVID in South Dakota and elsewhere. And yeah, it's just been a long ride. It's been really unpredictable, and you know, there's a lot of things about COVID that we're still learning.
So, when are we going to call it a past pandemic? That to me is my goal.
Well, ours too, for sure. You know, the fastest way out of this pandemic will be seeing people become vaccinated at a high rate. And so we're shooting to have 70% of people vaccinated in the state, and we're doing well with that. We've got about 56% of South Dakotans who are eligible for vaccination having at least one shot, and almost 50% of people have completed their full series. So those are great numbers, but really want to see that number get closer to 70% and beyond to really feel like we can put COVID in the rearview mirror.
I get a little worried that there are people who say they're absolutely not going to get the vaccine. I've got people in my own family that are in healthcare. They're saying, why would we do that and put ourselves at risk? I don't think you believe they're putting themselves at risk.
No, I really don't. You know, the thing that I think some people have struggled with is just how quickly we were able to get vaccines out and get shots in arms. And I think that's given some people pause. But I can tell you that there haven't been any shortcuts in regard to safety of the vaccine. We know that it's, effective at preventing hospitalizations and deaths. In fact, close to 100% effective at that. So the vaccines are effective. We know that they're safe. Really why we got vaccines so quickly is because we were able to cut some red tape in the process of just development at the national level, which is a great thing. And so I think people should be very confident that they can take the vaccines and not experience, you know, severe adverse outcomes.
I know you keep track of numbers. 1981 is the number I saw on those that have died. 20 counties still showing some cases. We go up, we go down. But, you know, we got some variants out there scaring people a little bit. How do we keep from being scared, particularly with those that if we're in a tight situation aren't masking up and we are?
Yeah, well, I think it's really important, Bill, that people first of all, remain vigilant and be very careful about the sources of the information that you're using to make decisions about COVID. Make sure that you're using trusted and verified sources. You can always come to the DOH website or covid.sd.gov. Certainly the CDC would have, you know, the science and facts out there about COVID. If you're getting your information from social media, I really just tell people to be very careful because even if it's a person that you trust, their source of information might not be, you know, accurate or based on the facts. So, you know, folks really do need to be careful with that. And, you know, I tell people that, you know, having questions is normal, but being fearful is not. And so if you're fearful about the situation, you know, again, make sure you're getting the best information possible. People, if they don't want to access the website, can always call us as well. Our 800 number is 1-800-997-9999. 2880, and you'll get accurate information through that hotline as well.
There are campaigns. I think South Dakota Farmers Union, one of the organizations that is saying, take the shot, take the stick, move along. You think that kind of effort and that by other groups is pretty important?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important for people to understand, first of all, how much support we actually have for vaccinations. I mean, again, we've got over half of our population getting at least their first dose. And so, you know, and we haven't seen, you know, any poor outcomes, any, you know, serious side effects from any single person in South Dakota. And so I think people can look to that and say, you know, I can take that same path and feel good about that. But I think it's also important for folks to hear from their friends and family about their experiences being vaccinated. And, you know, most people that I talk to really describe it as a sense of relief that you can really do some things. You can kind of get back to normal. You can do some things that you've done in the past and feel that you're doing that safely. And for most people, that's a relief.
Three vaccines, any one better than the other?
Well, you know, they're all very, very effective, and that's the good news. And in terms of, you know, what we've always been really watching around COVID, it's, you know, we don't want to see people in the hospital, and certainly we want to avoid deaths. And all three vaccines are incredibly effective at preventing hospitalizations and deaths, upwards of, you know, 95 to 100%, preventing those kinds of outcomes. And so, of course, we've got, you know, one of the vaccines is a one-shot series, so some people like that option because it's a one-and-done. The other two require a second shot either 21 or 28 days later. And so, you know, there's some nuances that way. Of course, the Pfizer vaccine, that's a two-shot vaccine, and that is the one that is available for anybody that's 16 and older. Right now, the Moderna or the Janssen vaccine are for folks that are 18 and older.
The variants. You concerned about those?
Yeah, you know, that's the problem with a virus. It's not unexpected to see a virus mutate, which is really what a variant is. It's just one part of the genomic code of the original COVID-19 virus being, you know, changing over time. And when we see viruses circulating for any length of time, the risk is that they mutate in that way, and then they become something that might be harder to deal with, either from a treatment perspective, or the vaccines that we've developed may not be as effective. So anytime we see variants, you know, we really want to watch that. The best thing people can do right now, especially with those variants being out there, is to be vaccinated, because that reduces the number of people that can become infected, and it doesn't give that virus the host that it needs to be able to produce those variants.
All right. Tough question for you. They've been simple, and you saved my life once, so I've got to keep it simple for you, okay? You like that?
All righty. I do.
The governor has said we got to keep the state open, and we're working very hard to do that. But at the same time, we want the schools to be open, and we've got to get the shots. How do you live in that kind of a climate to make sure everybody's protected?
Well, you know, Bill, I think people in South Dakota have really stepped up. I mean, we here at the Department of Health and with Governor Noem's leadership have strived to provide, you know, the best facts, the latest facts, and really help people make the decisions that they need to make for themselves in a way that's respectful of what they need to do in life. And, you know, people need to work. Kids need to be in school. I'm just so extremely happy that we've been able to see kids in school in the last year, because I'm talking to my colleagues in other states and they're really, really struggling with, you know, the ill effects of kids not being in those settings for a whole year and what that really means to them. And so, you know, how do you really balance people living their lives with still being safe? And I think people in South Dakota have stepped up. And I think, you know, again, we're not done with the pandemic. And so I know people are tired. I know they're sick of doing things that are inconvenient. But we really do need to continue to do what we've been doing. And that is, you know, get the shot when you're able to. You know, we've got a lot of access points across the state. You can find those on our website. It's easier than ever to become vaccinated. It's at no cost to you as a patient. And it's really going to be the way that we get this pandemic behind us. But in addition, we've got a, you know, maintain social distancing when we can. You know, if you have a choice of getting together with people inside versus outside, do it outside because it's just going to be less risk of transmission. And really just keep paying attention to those things until we can say that this pandemic is over.
I've had two shots. Do you see me getting a third one? I had Pfizer and I had it in the right order of getting the shot. Do you think we're going to need a third?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's certainly a good question. If I was a wagering person, I'd say, yeah, there's likely going to be a booster shot, which what we don't know is, you know, will that be tied to all of the current vaccines or will that be, you know, will it be on an annual basis or what have you? But, you know, I'm very confident that the scientists that are working through this, you know, are going to steer us in the right direction on this. And, you know, if we need a booster shot, I'll gladly get mine because that just means I'm going to, you know, be protected from this virus and avoid hospitalization and death. Say, Bill, one other thing that people should not let up on is the need for testing. And so, you know, we've seen a lot of changes in the world of testing. Testing is easier than ever. Right now, we've got free testing available through our website, where if you click on the link there, kit will be sent to your house. If you find that you need, you have symptoms later on or even then, you can do a very easy saliva-based test, send it back, no cost to you, and know your results. We've also seen testing just become more available across the state. Lots of pharmacies are offering it and certainly healthcare providers. And if you feel like you might have symptoms of COVID, just go in and get tested because if you do, then you can isolate and not spread it any further.
Madam Secretary, thanks for your work. Keep us safe.
Thank you, Bill. Glad to be here.
Wayne Soren, Vice President, South Dakota Farmers Union, Rocky Foreman, Man in Motion, Man with a Safety Trailer, the campaign, Farmers Union. You guys are saying get the shots.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that we really need to stress is everybody kind of looks at COVID being a big city problem, you know, New York City and Florida and places like that where there's lots and lots of people. But the rural areas can get it too. In my area, right after the D. Smith basketball championship, they had a big outbreak in D. Smith. And so that's not really a big town, but when it starts going through even a small town, it impacts a lot of people.
And there's a lot of people that are a little reluctant to get it, but I think when you hear Madam Secretary talk about, yes, you need to do it, and yes, I think there'll be a third, I don't think she said that before, then we know it's still serious.
Well, and that's, I think that's the real issue that needs to come forward is that, you know, until everybody gets vaccinated, it'll still mutate. It's trying to live its life, and whatever we try to do to stop it, it's going to try to do something different to live a little longer. And so the quicker we can get vaccinated, the quicker we can get everybody's shots, the better off we'll all be. And it's not just the United States. I mean, you just look over at India. They've got a huge problem over there, and that could come back to the United States. I mean, there's no problem with that coming across.
All right, Man in Motion, Rocky Foreman, you've got the safety trailer. You've been all over. What's the reaction to the shots, and what are you doing with the trailer?
We've took the trailer to four towns now. We went to Lemon, Clark, Fort Pierre, and Chester. It's been going really, really good. It's good to be back doing that type of thing, and it's not quite as hands-on as it was before the pandemic started, but with the safety procedures and it's a little bit more work. The groups are a lot smaller, so it seems like you do your presentation a lot more throughout the day when you go to a school, but it's just good to be back doing it. And with planting season starting and road construction season starting, it's just really important to make these kids aware of what's going on out there, and their tractors are huge now, so if they're out in the yard, just making sure they're at a safe place and watching out for the tractors and the equipment, and also the road construction season starting too, as I drove in some on the way down here. So just important to spread the awareness about safety of all agriculture.
We're going to talk about the camps that are coming up. We'll talk about the state fair. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more health care. Farmers Union.
Tim Rabe joins us. He's the president and the CEO of the South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations. What the heck is that?
great question. Thanks, Bill, for having me on. So really what it boils down to is we are the hospital association. So All 54 nonprofit hospitals are members of our association. We also have 46 long-term care facilities, along with some home health, hospice, and some assisted living members as well.
The mission of this is kind of interesting. You know, you mentioned 54 hospitals. You mentioned the rural health care being a part of it. We're a rural state. We need health care.
We do need health care. You're absolutely right. And it's a huge challenge for us in many parts of the state, as many of your listeners would already know. And so our job is to help support all of the facilities we currently have in the entire state, across our entire footprint, making sure that the citizens of this state have access to quality health care in a timely fashion.
I don't know about you, Tim, but I worry about health care out in the rural areas. There are not hospitals. I had a rural fire chief tell me, if you're having a heart attack and you don't move quickly, you can be dead before you get there. And his thought was, it is so critical that people understand health care in rural areas.
It is. You know, having grown up on a farm myself, although near the Sioux Falls area, within about 20 miles, but, you know, some of the stuff we take for granted, especially on the eastern half of the state and certainly on the far west part of the state. But in the middle, there's some big areas, some big gaps that people have some length of time to access to, frankly, any kind of health care, whether that even be your rural volunteer ambulance service or a hospital or a clinic. And, you know, the infrastructure we have today, we have to help keep there and keep stable for many years to come.
All right, so here's the rub. South Dakota is one of only a handful of states that has not expanded Medicaid. What's keeping us from that?
Well, I think, you know, from a legislative perspective, I think they tell you most, probably number one, is the cost of the state. Would probably be their answer, but I certainly don't want to put words in their mouth. But I think that rank up there is one of the top reasons.
Well, if that's a reason, are we going to be able to get something done? We've got lawmakers that go to peer. They make decisions. Can we get any help from Dusty Johnson and our two senators?
Well, it's kind of out of their hands, frankly, at this point. It's more of a state-oriented solution at this point, where either you could pass it legislatively and approve the budget for that, or, you know, as you're well know, there's a couple of ballot initiatives floating around out there to put it to the voice of the people and let the people decide, I guess.
For those that don't know, Medicaid is what?
So really, if you think about Medicare, this is kind of the difference. Medicare is for your folks 65 and older, and Medicaid is for pregnant women with limited resources, kids under 18, and then the elderly that do not have resources. And so kind of think of your grandma, grandpa, mom, and dad living in the nursing home that do not have any resources, and it supports them in that capacity. But really nobody between 18 and 65 years of age.
So this is serious business. It is life or death.
Yeah, it's, you know, as hospitals, we always have advocated for getting the citizens of this state the opportunity to access affordable health care, so that if you need to go to the emergency room, you don't have to worry about selling your house and going broke. So that, you know, whatever the model is that helps people get access to health care, that's a model we support. And then in turn, help support our member hospitals in keeping the doors open, frankly. In 2019, there was $163 million of what we would call bad debt at hospitals, folks that just simply couldn't pay their bill, and so our community hospitals just write that off.
Tim Rave with us. He is president and CEO of South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations. You mentioned a couple of initiatives out there. Talk to us a little bit about those.
Yeah, it's obviously not a secret. It's been through the what we call the Legislative Research Council and the Attorney General approving process. And so there's a couple of initiatives floating out there that if they're successful in gathering signatures, they would be on the ballot in November of 2022. So, you know, a year and a half away right now. So, and so that those are just going through the process, frankly, as we speak. I know there's people out gathering signatures, and we're part of a small part of a 14-member coalition of entities that are supporting this initiative. And we just hope to play a small part in helping folks get access to affordable health care. So I wouldn't begin to name them all because I'll leave some off. So there's a website that has been started, South Dakota's Decide Healthcare, and it lists all the 14 organizations there.
Tim Ray, President, CEO, appreciate your visit. Let's talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bill. Have a great day.
Gentlemen, rural health care, how important is it in South Dakota, and what do we need to do?
Well, it's extremely important. I know Lake Preston, they lost their hospital here. Oh, it's probably been about 15 or 20 years ago now. And like Rocky said, you look at this equipment. Tim talked about a heart attack, but I talk about more about the size of the equipment and how few farmers there are. And so if something were to happen, fall on you, a big piece of equipment fall on you, or you run over or something, for me, where I live over here by Lake Preston, it's 30 miles to a hospital, pretty much. And, boy, you know, you lose a limb or something, I don't think you're going to make 30 miles. It's just not going to happen. So for us, it's kind of a dual thing. You know, this telemedicine, I think, is a huge deal. But in lots of places, there's not adequate internet to be able to do that.
The broadband might help.
Absolutely, without question. So it's a huge issue, and one that probably has to have multiple solutions to.
You have the safety trailer, Rocky. I know you talk and hear a lot about health care needs to be better.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's a huge expense for these producers out there paying for that health care, the premium each month, and just some of the access isn't there, like what he was saying. And the other thing is, it's just not feasible for them guys to pay that kind of money for them premium each month. And then also, if they do have to do something, they're still getting a bill in the mail, even though they have the health insurance. So they're still paying co-pays and different premiums after they have the service. So just something that we really at Farmers Union pay a lot of attention to and been working on really hard. So
glad you do too. Coming up, the Farm Family of the Month. This guy is a keeper, retiring. And boy, the things that he was doing, fencing and mowing. We'll have his story. We'll also talk as well with Eric Sumption, Beef Council. Talk with Candy Briley, State Fair coming up, and Laura Edwards, State Climatologist. Wayne Soren, Vice President, South Dakota Farmers Union, with us, along with one Rocky Foreman, Farmers Union Man in Motion, the safety trailer guy. I'm Bill Zortman, and this is our monthly South Dakota Farmers Union show. And you can visit the SDFU website, sdfu.org, has all the interviews, conversation, and even the podcast. It'll go with it from start to finish. All right, you don't know Larry.
Well, I know of Larry, and he's usually a pretty good storyteller, as I understand.
I think we just should listen.
Okay.
Well, it's time to talk to our South Dakota Farmers Union Farm Family of the Month, Larry Stroshine, Mansfield, South Dakota. That's not too far from Aberdeen, right?
That is correct. Yeah, it's south of Aberdeen. It's actually into Spink County, right on the Spink County-Brown County line.
So I understand that you've been out there doing a little fence work, mowing a little yard,
just things that
a third-generation rancher would do.
Yeah, correct. Yes, I'm a good watcher. I kind of like to watch everybody work, but once in a while I can be a gopher and go get somebody something that they need. But as far as me doing any of the hard work, I don't do that anymore.
Well, I have to tell you, when I look and see that the family raises mostly cattle and then you take some time for farming, a lot of people would say they do it the other way around.
Well, yeah, I've just always loved the cows, and so that's kind of where my emphases are. But we, Sharon and I, lease our farm to our daughter Amy and John Juana. So they're the ones that do all the heavy lifting and do the farming.
Third generation to ranch.
Yes.
You know, that's pretty important today, passing the torch and being able to put your feet up and just directing people.
Yep, I really enjoy it. I really do. And we built a new home, so now and they bought the building site, and that's where the work was at, and that's where they wanted to be, and so it's really working out well. And it really is. It's really gratifying for me.
Now, you don't sound now old, but you've got a transition plan in place. That sounds to me like you're looking to be planted sometime down the road.
Well, I suppose, yeah.
So the important thing for you, your family made the decision that they wanted to farm. They've done it for generations, and you do it the way that you should. You enjoy life.
That is true. Yes, it is. We have grandchildren that go to school at Warner, so we've been very busy watching volleyball and basketball, and now, of course, it's the track season, and we're just winding down there, and we had a spring concert here last Friday night, so it's very enjoyable.
Now, if they asked me through three generations if I'd made any mistakes, and what should the fourth and fifth generation do? What would you tell them?
Wow, I don't know. The way things are changing as far as technology is concerned, what we thought was right, even looking backwards, I don't know how it would be looking forward when we're going to have autonomous tractors and vehicles and combines and and I would assume marketing is going to be revolutionized by this electronic system we got. So what is going to be in the future? Boy, I can't comprehend. I can't comprehend what they've got on the drawing board for our equipment. Look what we've got now. So what are they thinking up? It's just amazing.
You need to interpret something that's been said in the show today, okay? And it's pretty simple. We've got corn prices that are going up, which is good. But if we're raising cattle, that's not good. How do we do both?
Well, I think ag has had that dilemma forever. One segment of the agriculture industry eats off of the other segment. It's just the nature of the beast, and I don't know. Once in a while, you have both livestock, dairy, poultry, and grain high, but most of the time, the profit comes out of somebody else's loss, and that is so wrong, and I don't know how you change it. A car company making automobiles don't make money because the steel industry lost money, and that's kind of, but that's not the way it works in agriculture. A cow-calf man makes money because corn is cheap, or vice versa.
Well, I understand you like to enjoy your free time. Are there things you can tell me about? And please tell me things you can't tell me about.
What I can't tell you about? Oh, boy, man.
Remember, we have a vast audience that gets into Aberdeen and Huron. So
yeah.
We want you to make sure you share.
Okay. Wow. You stumped me. What I can't tell you about? I guess I got an open book. I don't know.
You know, that's a nice way to put it. There are a lot of things out there that you seem to enjoy, and whether it's mowing the yard, the fence work, you know, not worrying about the price of corn because you got the cattle. You make things work.
Yes. There is one thing that I have done, though, since I've been retired. I've been retired for, 8 years now? But most farmers, when they retire, they buy a new boat, and they pack a cooler full of beer, and they go out in the middle of a lake, and they fish, and they have a couple of cool ones. Well, I packed my cooler and put it in my ATV and go out in the middle of the pasture and have a couple of cool ones, and the little calves, they get curious, and they come and they walk around the Polaris and they snoozle on my fingers, and then when I go home, I don't even have to clean fish. I just go in the house.
You're an amazing man, Larry Strohschein.
Well, thank you very much for the compliment.
Thanks for being a part of agriculture here in South Dakota. And the South Dakota Farmers Union congratulates you on being their Farm Family of the Month.
Well, thank you. It's really an honor. When Laura called me up, I said, yes, we would. And I'm it just proceeded from there.
All right. Man in Motion, what do you think? He's country, but he enjoys life.
Yeah, that was a great interview. He'd be fun to go have a few cold ones with sometime, probably.
But. And what was he saying about the fish and the cows? And
yeah, he doesn't like the fish. He just goes out and watches the cows and has his cold ones. So.
And the little calves in the spring, they are fun to watch when they figure out they got legs. It's really cute, yeah.
Now, we have a neighbor of yours coming up in our next segment.
Eric Sumption.
Right. We're going to talk beef. The South Dakota beef industry. We'll talk there. We'll talk with Candy at the State Fair. Laura, state climatologist. South Dakota Farmers Union monthly show. We've got the Vice President Wayne Soren here, but I think we'd better let a neighbor. Rocky, you better introduce Eric.
This is Eric Sumption, and he's with Sumption Farms by Frederick, South Dakota.
And you also are South Dakota Beef Industry Council Board of Directors, is that correct?
Yes, yep. I'm a member on the board, yep. I was the president 2 years ago and the year before that.
Eric, would you want to talk about the spread between boxed beef prices and what the fat cattle are, they're bidding at the fat cattle at, and what antitrust laws we could be enforcing with what they're doing?
I guess what's hard to figure out for me is if you, I know there was a gentleman last week that figured boxed beef back with the prices we have, and it would take us back to like $1.88 live, and I think today probably the best bid you could get on fat cattle would maybe be a 116 to 118. So you're talking 70 cents difference there. I'm having a hard time understanding how we can be that far apart. I guess as far as consumer listening, when they go to the grocery store to buy beef on the shelf and they think it's expensive that we're getting all this money, and we're not asking for all of it. We just want to be profitable.
Yeah, Eric, you know, this is Wayne Soren. You know, when you talk to consumers that don't really have any ties to the background, to farming, one of the first things they say is, gee whiz, you know, I go and I buy me a T-bone, it's $27. How much is that steer that you sell? And they figure that $27 comes back to us, and really only a very small portion of that $27 comes back to us.
Yeah, you know, and right now they want to use the excuse of high-priced corn, and I get that in the short term, but eventually high-priced corn, we have to have high-priced cattle or nobody would feed them. So us as cow-calf producers, we're not getting paid. The guy that's feeding the cattle is not getting paid. So where is that difference, you know? And how do we try to level the playing field a little bit?
Eric, this is Rocky. There's been a lot of talk about doing the mandatory system to up the cash trade in the different regions, or 50-14 mandatory bill. What's your thoughts on any of them kind of bills?
Well, I think anything that would force them to go on the cash, like purchase cattle on the cash on a consistent basis. I mean, the only thing I can figure out now is the board ran up a month ago. Everybody went and contracted their cattle, so now they don't have to buy cattle. So then it allows them to not be in the cash market. Well, and if you get up here in the northern country where we are, there's very few contract cattle. Well, like now, it'd be hard to get a bid, and then the bid isn't. I think we figured ours the other day. I had to have $1.25 to break even, so right now I'm running $10, $11 under break even, and that's getting worse every day because I'm feeding $7 corn.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it trickles down to the cow-calf guy also, you know, as it goes down.
you know, unlike us, we finish all the cattle that calves that we raise. We run cow calf deal, and then I put them in the feedlot and finish them, and it gives me allows me to get a better handle on my genetics and what they'll do. And so it's a little bit different than a guy that's west of the river, doesn't finish cattle, just sells the calves in the fall. As long as he gets a good price in October, November, they're usually pretty happy. But they don't understand is the guy that's feeding them cattle needs to make money too, or he won't be there to buy them.
Right, right. Well, and the other thing with all these packers, something that the consumers need to understand is a large chunk of them aren't even owned by Americans. They're foreign countries that own them.
Yeah, well, you could see that coming. That's they're sourcing food for their country a lot of the time, and we allowed them to do it. And now I don't know how we step back in control.
Well, that's the problem. The JBSs of the world, you know, they're huge across the whole world, not just in the United States. And so, yeah, how do we push back on that? But something we need to do something so that we get a fair price, and the consumers do also.
Yeah, and we're not saying like now if what's their margins, probably $700 a carcass roughly. I mean, I'm not saying we want it all. If you gave me 100 of it or 200 of it, at least I could break even and make a living. Right now, the last 4 years, we're not making a living, and I don't know how much longer some of these younger guys, and I'm not that old. I can't keep doing it.
Eric, to spin off of that, would you want to talk about the importance of some smaller and regional-sized packing plants? You know, they're year and a half out, the ones we have now in South Dakota, just to even get something to put in your own freezer. Do you want to talk about the importance of the small and regional packers for a minute?
Well, I think we'd get back to a little more consistent cash if we could get a bunch more smaller plants going, because it's kind of our fault in a way. We've become dependent on the major four, and we need to become dependent on them. They can dictate what they want for a price. We saw a little bit of this when the pandemic hit. All these local locker plants are flooded. If you wanted to get an animal in today to harvest, you would be a minimum a year. A lot of them are a year and a half out. Well, that takes a lot of planning. And then if you get somebody lined up to purchase it, and then something happens to them, well, they can't afford to pay for it, or the price changes enough, who's going to give, you know?
Eric Sumption, South Dakota Beef Industry, appreciate you weighing in this morning. Appreciate all you do for South Dakota Farmers Union. Candy Briley, South Dakota State Fair, countdown, where are we at? What's the clock saying?
Hey, good morning. We are at 113 days, 20 hours, 6 minutes and 58 seconds and counting till your 2021 South Dakota State Fair.
When is it?
September 2nd through the 6th. We do have our Channel Seeds preview day on Wednesday, September 1st. So it's coming quickly.
So, what will be different this year? Lots of things going on up there, lots of things that have been passed. Tell us about it.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that's going to be a little bit different this year, but making way for exciting things to come. I mentioned that preview day is on Wednesday, September 1st, but actually, and we're going to start talking about this a little bit more, is that our beef shows are going to be on the Monday and Tuesday prior to the fair in response to the beef complex fire and having to make some adjustments on that. So we'll actually be having that show ahead of the fair this year. So we'll be working through some of those logistics, but just thoroughly excited to have been having such a great group of people to work with to make that happen this year. We have a great grandstand lineup that we are putting together. We're working on the final touches. We have made some announcements for our concerts and our Bull Bash coming back, and we still have our Friday night concert to announce yet. So we're looking forward to getting the green light to get that announced, because time's flying. Tickets are going to be going on sale here early June, and we actually start with our VIP table pre-sale on Monday, May 24th. So lots of things happening. Our online entries bouncing back to the livestock and the static entry side of things. Those entries are going to be posted. The online entry process is going live tomorrow. So we've got a number of irons in the fire here in the fair office, and we're just looking forward to looking at the fair come September.
There's been a sighting. Candy Briley, State Fair. We appreciate you. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Sounds excellent. Thank you very much.
All right. From the State Fair, Laura Edwards, South Dakota State Climatologist. Laura, good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
These guys basically wanted to talk about the dry conditions. Now, I don't know if it's raining where you're at, but just a little bit of rain is no big deal, right?
Yeah, a little bit of rain would be helpful at this point, especially in the Sioux Falls area. I was just looking at the rainfall totals since April 1st, and it's about an inch and a half behind average for the last 6 weeks. So really, we could use a little more moisture down that way.
Laura, did Mobridge get quite a bit of rain out of this last little bit that went through?
Mobridge got a little bit, but kind of the real wet spot was that southern Perkins, northern Zeebach County, which is really right in the heart of the worst drought area. They got about 1.5 to 2 inches there. Really every drop counts. You know, I think some of the impacts already are kind of set, given how dry they were in April. And the season so far, but you know they could use all the rain that they can get right now.
I've heard a lot of people say that the drought is over, but an inch doesn't end the drought, does it?
No. And in fact, I was looking at some data for Lemon, which is northern Perkins County up on the border. They've had the driest January through April on record in over 100 years, about 115 years, and driest November through April, if you go back to the fall last year. So, yeah, they have a big hole to dig out of the drought up there.
Laura, what does the forecast for the rest of the summer and into the fall look like?
You know, right now it's leaning towards warmer than average and drier than average still as we look ahead towards June, July, and August, which is pretty tough news. You know, we looks like we'll have an active weather pattern here, I'd say, in the next 1 to 2 weeks with several chances of rain here for the middle part of May. But yeah, deeper into the summer, the middle of summer, looks like whatever drought we have could be holding on for a while.
A lot of folks that are looking out in their yards are seeing brown spots. They're a little concerned all over the state. What's causing it? The rain maybe be the answer to it?
I think so. You know, we could use some moisture almost everywhere in the state. The one kind of wetter spot is the northeast corner, which actually has above average rainfall for the spring so far. But yeah, a lot of us could use some continued timely rains, I think, would be really great. But we've had some cool temperatures, you know, which have kind of held things kind of in suspended animation. One of my colleagues said, you know, it's kind of holding things back, retaining, you know, keeping our soil moisture, but it's also holding back kind of our crop progress. So as soon as we get some warm temperatures, I think our need for water is going to go up.
So, Laura, are we in a La Nina or out of a La Nina? Where the heck are we in that area?
Yeah, we're kind of getting to the end of the current La Nina cycle that we're in right now, headed towards what we call neutral, kind of near average temperatures in the Pacific Ocean. But it looks like we might be heading back into La Nina in the fall season. So usually that outlook or that forecast comes out more in the late summer, early fall. But yeah, we're kind of coming out of La Nina right now, and it doesn't really do a lot for us in the summer anyway. It doesn't tell us a whole lot. So either way, I think that's a non-issue right now.
Laura Edwards, South Dakota State Climatologist. You always do good work. We appreciate you. Get a little rain for us, though, will you?
All right. Thank you. I'll try my best.
All right, guys. We're in our last 30 seconds. One thing you'll remember about the show.
Being in studio with you, Bill.
Oh, my. And you brought the mask. Man in Motion?
Just being here, and I thought it was a great show and lots of good information.
Well, we appreciate everybody being with us. I'm Bill Zortman with Wayne Soren, Rocky Foreman. This is the monthly South Dakota Farmers Union Show. Our time is up. Thank you for yours.
Kello News Talk 1320 KELO Sioux Falls, FM 107.9 KELQ Flandreau Sioux Falls, and online at kello.com.